and welcome to this edition of The Autograph with me, Susan Madaris. Today, I'm sitting down with author Norman Finkelstein to talk about his controversial new book, Beyond Chutzpah, in which he talks about the abuse of the history of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in American academia and the price he had to pay for speaking his mind. So stay tuned. The author of some 5 books and countless essays, Professor Norman Finkelstein is a self-declared forensic scholar. He has written sharply critical academic reviews of several prominent writers and scholars whom he accuses of misrepresenting the documentary record in order to defend Israel's policies and practices, notably against the Palestinian people. You describe yourself as a forensic scholar. How is that?
It's a highfalutin term. I don't attach too much importance to the title itself. I think basically it means that lies enrage me, and I devote most of my adult professional career to exposing what I took to be fairly transparent and sometimes not transparent misrepresentations of reality, which were being put to the service of evil causes, nefarious causes. And so a lot of what I do is simply go through footnotes, try to untangle the logic of arguments, see how lies are constructed, and then take them apart. And it has a certain kind of, there's a kind of intellectual interest in it. It's kind of like a detective story. How did somebody manage to turn night into day, black into white? And it seems like it meets all the standards of scholarship. There are footnotes, there are chapter headings. Everything seems nicely organized. The problem is, it's pure fiction. And take it apart. And that's what I do.
His latest book, Beyond Chutzpah, deals with the misuse of anti-Semitism and the abuse of history. Finkelstein also presents a wealth of evidence on the human rights situation in the occupied territories. It takes books like Joan Peters' From Time Immemorial and Alan Dershowitz's The Case for Israel to task as academic hoaxes. The book has since stirred widespread controversy. In June 2007, Finkelstein was denied his tenure from DePaul University. Among the controversial aspects of this decision were attempts by opponents of Finkelstein to derail him from working within the American academia. Let's talk about your book, Beyond Chutzpah. This is also a forensic scholarly book, so to say. What motivated you to write this book?
Well, initially, I wasn't going to write anything about Professor Dershowitz or the book because it seemed intellectually very lightweight and not much of a challenge. One day somebody said I should look at it because it was at the top of the bestseller list. So I started to read through it, and parts of it sounded very familiar. About 25 years ago now, my first forensic inquiry was with a book called From Time Immemorial, written allegedly by a woman named Joan Peters. And I knew that book inside out. I read it many times and went through all the footnotes, and it was a complete hoax. I started to read Dershowitz's book, and I said, this sounds like From Time Immemorial. And so I took From Time Immemorial off my bookshelf, put the two books side by side. I said, I know that quote, that's from Time Immemorial. I know that quote, that's from Time Immemorial. And it's kind of funny, you know, it's a quarter of a century later, but I was still able to find all the quotes in the original. And then I was going to write something small on it, just an amusing commentary. Harvard professor plagiarizes hoax. But the large part of the book was devoted to Israel's alleged human rights record, or allegedly a depiction of Israel's human rights record. And those are more serious matters. They deal with everything from torture to political assassinations to killings of civilians. And it happens that there's a voluminous documentary record accumulated by human rights organizations. And I thought it was an interesting juxtaposition to show this is what the Felix Frankfurter professor of law at Harvard Law School claims, and this is what Human Rights Watch says. This is what Dershowitz claims. This is what B'Tselem, the Israeli Information Center for Human Rights in the Occupied Territory, says. This is what Dershowitz says. This is what Amnesty International says. And it's quite clear, juxtaposing them, that somebody is lying, not just sort of bending the truth, muting the facts. No, we're talking about flat out egregious lies. And then it's up to the reader to decide, is Amnesty International or are Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and B'Tselem lying? Or is Alan Dershowitz, who cites no sources apart from official government, Israeli government handouts, lying?
And what was Mr. Alan Dershowitz saying about this?
Basically, he was saying that Israel has an exemplary human rights record, and if it appears otherwise, it's because of a biased media, biased human rights organizations, all of whom are biased because they are anti-Semites. And you could believe that, or you could believe that maybe the reason Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, B'Tselem, and assorted other persons and institutions are saying Israel's human rights record is bad, the reason is because it is bad.
You know, there are many who argue that when someone challenges Israel's policies against the Palestinians, they will automatically be accused of anti-Semitism. Would you agree with that elaboration?
Well, you know, anti-Semitism, I mean, there's a famous quote by Samuel Johnson that patriotism is the last refuge of scoundrels. And anti-Semitism and the Holocaust weapon are the last refuge of scoundrel apologists for Israel. What else do they have to rest on or rely on? The record is terrible, and they have no option apart from claiming that the critics are anti-Semitic. How else can you account for the fact that Amnesty, Human Rights Watch, B'Tselem, and numerous other Israeli human rights organizations, Physicians for Human Rights Israel, Public Committee Against Torture in Israel, how else can you account for it except using categories like anti-Semites and self-hating Jews?
A central thesis of Beyond Chutzpah is that whenever Israel faces a public relations debacle, its apologists sound the alarm that a new anti-Semitism has come about. He argues, in his book, that the phrase is merely a vehicle used by Israel to pursue its political interests, namely in the Middle East.
Well, I devote the first part of the book to looking at the actual record and what's called the new anti-Semitism. No evidence of a new anti-Semitism anywhere in the Europe or in North America. This is all just a fantasy concocted in order to, quote, explain why Israel is coming under so much criticism. It's also periodic. If you look at books written in the 1970s, 1980s, they all have the same title. They're all called the new anti-Semitism. Every time Israel comes under diplomatic pressure to resolve the conflict, and every time Israel's human rights record, every time it commits, you know, massacres, to defend itself, it claims anti-Semitism.
Mr. Dershowitz gives firm assurances that Israel is dealing with its adversaries justly and humanely. You talk about the brutal torture of Palestinian prisoners and the lethal disregard for Palestinian children and non-combatants, on the other hand.
The record is pretty clear. You know, I should point out, until recently, the record was not clear because human rights organizations felt a lot of pressure from liberal Jews not to report accurately on what was going on in Israel. So you'll take a concrete example like the case of torture. Up until the early 1990s, no major human rights organization would speak about torture committed by Israel. You take, for example, Amnesty International's 1980s publication on torture. They had declared 1980s the decade of torture, to abolish torture, and they put out a manual on torture. They would not use the word torture to describe how Israel was treating Palestinian detainees. However, by the 1990s, when human rights organizations began accurately to talk about torture, they frankly admitted Israel had been torturing Palestinian detainees since right after the occupation. Even if you open up Benny Morris, the Israeli historian, his book Righteous Victims, he says from right after 1967, Israel was torturing Palestinian detainees. By the time of the First Intifada, 1987 to 1993, the torture had become epidemic. Every human rights organization said that Israeli torture and ill treatment of Palestinian detainees was methodical and systematic. The estimates are between 87 and 1993, Israel tortured several tens of thousands of Palestinian detainees. In 1999, the Israeli High Court, after having sanctioned torture for many years, reversed itself and declared most, not all, but most forms of torture illegal. And since then, the record has improved, no question about it. The most recent reports, which came out in the last weeks, as a matter of fact, document the fact that Israel does continue to torture some detainees, political detainees, and ill-treat many others, in particular through the use of shackling.
In 1999, torture was delegitimized by Israel. Has it stopped?
The two escape clauses were sleep deprivation, which the High Court allowed for, and what's called a necessity defense. Necessity basically means that if the interrogator feels like there's a major terrorist attack about to happen, and in the name of necessity tortures the person, then afterwards he or she can be exonerated on the grounds that he or she acted in the because of burning necessity. But the most recent cases of torture have not dealt with that. They've dealt with using handcuffs and shackling people in such ways that causes excruciating pain.
Did you have difficulty publishing your book, Beyond Chutzpah?
I naively thought it would be a battle about footnotes and scholarship. He's going to say this, I'm going to say that. He's going to say that, no, this source is accurate, your source is inaccurate. I'm going to say, no, your source is inaccurate, my source is accurate. I thought it would be an intellectual battle. I really did not anticipate it was going to sink to the level when he would be saying in places, you know, going all over the place saying my late mother was a Nazi collaborator. I just did not anticipate it would go there. I understood he was going to have a problem because I knew the facts. And he knew I knew the facts. But I really didn't anticipate it was going to go, as they say, south.
And California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger also got involved in the battle of publishing your book, is that right?
Yeah, he began to bring a large amount of pressure to bear on the University of California Press. And it was not a very pleasant experience to go through. My book was vetted by at least seven libel lawyers that the University of California Press had to bring into the picture. And these libel lawyers were humorless. Anything which in any way may be construed as libelous, out, 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 you know, until the book was, you know, flattened. It was not a very interesting read, in my opinion. There was no liveliness, no, a little humor here, irony there, wit there, out, out, out. And he brought really terrible pressure. It was not that the University of California thought I couldn't win a libel case. That wasn't the problem. They said to me, libel cases are typically settled out of court. We don't have the money for a libel case. They said, for example, If Dershowitz sues you in New York, my publisher was University of California, Berkeley, we don't even have the money to fly in a staff to New York for the court proceedings. And that was the fear. You know, Dershowitz said, quote, he was not abashed about it. He said to the Boston Globe, quote, if they publish that book, I will own their company. Own, O-W-N. Namely, he's going to bankrupt it. And he actually wrote a letter. It's amazing in its language. There was one part of the book, the appendix, which dealt with the plagiarism issue. And I had him really nailed on the plagiarism issue because I had gotten a copy of the proofs for the book and I could demonstrate there was no question he plagiarized. They sent a letter. He hired, by the way, the most powerful law firm in the country. They sent a letter to the press which said, and now I'm quoting it almost verbatim, if you do not remove the appendix now, it will be a very painful operation later.
And in your attempt to travel to Israel, you were denied entry. Did you have contact with anti-Israeli elements?
They said it was a security risk. And, you know, I had met with Hezbollah officials when I was in Lebanon. And I may have committed errors during my interrogation. I don't know. They asked me to name the people I met. And it's not like Hezbollah said I couldn't name them, but I didn't want to give out names because it may look like I was a rat and it may be used against me by Hezbollah. So I told them, I think it's common knowledge who I met, but I'm not going to say anything. And then they used that as grounds for denying me entry. But the main Israeli newspaper, the most respected Israeli newspaper, Haaretz, the day or two after I was denied entry, they ran an editorial saying, who's afraid of Norman Finkelstein? And I said, it was obvious it was not security issues, it was just my political views. And the reason is obvious. If I was a security threat in Israel, then I have to be a security threat here. And they share all of their terrorism, you know, information. So why am I free to walk here?
You talk about the Zionist ideology. What is it and how is it being practiced?
I've found that it's not very useful to talk about Zionism in the abstract because you end up getting in these ideological questions. Are the Jews a nation or are the Jews a people? And really, who cares? I want to talk about what's being done to the people of Palestine. And it's, you know, really criminal. And we should try to focus on that and not squander precious time on ideological debates. It's hard to, you know, you don't want to make distinctions of better and worse suffering. But what's being done to the people of Gaza is just so awful, so inhuman. And that's what we should be looking at. I was just reading one of the reports that was not reports, it was a compilation of testimonies by Israeli soldiers called Breaking the Silence. And the images were just so ghastly. They described soldiers, not they, the soldiers themselves described how all the ground was shaking around them. It shook so much that as they were firing the missiles and bombs in the distance, they were told to get out. They were, you know, got homes of Gazans, which they had commandeered. They were told to get out of the houses because they were afraid the houses were going to collapse on their heads from the shaking as they were bombing the people way over there. And then they tell you, one soldier after another tells you, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We never faced any enemy. We never saw any Hamas people. We never engaged in combat. We never saw an Arab. There was no war there. It was a massacre. One person said it was like PlayStation computer game. Another one said It was like a child with a magnifying glass burning ants. That's what it was like in Gaza.
And finally, tell us a little about the documentary that is being made about you.
It's called American Radical, The Trials of Norman Finkelstein. And I've not seen the film, it's done. Some of my friends saw the film. And they say it's not a hagiographic film, it's not Christ's disciple, and I don't want that. I'm so acutely aware of my flaws. They're very painful to bear, I'm afraid to say, that I don't want to see myself as some sort of saint. It would be really embarrassing. I understand it's critical, but it's sympathetic in the end. And it has a lot about my family, my parents. I just think the filmmakers seem to have made a good faith effort, and that's what counts. I don't think I'll ever see the film.
Why?
I don't think a lot of it is about the painful episodes, and I'm not a martyr. You know, I know what real suffering is. I do. I've had a charmed life. I have. I got to do with my life what very few people get to do. You get to live your beliefs. That's a great thing to have in life, you know. It's absolutely, what could be a better life? You know, big house, big car. Compare that with getting to act on what you believe. And so, and I'm alive. You know, most parts of the world, people try to act on their belief. They don't lose their job. They don't lose their job. Okay, I lost my job. They lose a body part. They lose their eyes, they lose their nose, they lose their tongue, they lose their ears, they lose their head, and they lose their life. You know? What did I lose? Okay, I lost my job. Am I happy? No. You know, but I'm not so solipsistic, so self-absorbed that I can't see. It's been a charmed life.
That's all the time we have for this edition of The Autograph here on Press TV. Thank you for staying with us and watching. Remember, you can always send us your emails to theautograph@presstv.com. We're always looking forward to them. Remember to join us next week as we travel to the Lebanese capital, Beirut, as it has been nominated as a 2009 Book Capsule by UNESCO.